You've made it. We are on the last day. We got about 3.5 more hours to go. We're going to try to shorten it up so you guys can get out of here by about 4:30. So you're not stuck here till 5. Maybe watch a couple good football games tonight. So Elric and I are going to go over step 11. Then we're going to have a speaker and then do step 12. So I think we wanted to start out with a reading and do about a 7 to 10 minute meditation, get the uncomfortability juices flowing, see how that goes.
So, who are you? Yeah, so I'm bad at this. I'm Elric. I'm a heroin and methamphetamine addict.
Hey, Elric.
So we're going to take a moment of silence. I'm going to say the set-aside prayer, read this little reading, and then we're going to roll into meditation. I would encourage you, for those of you that don't do anything with meditation, I didn't do anything with meditation for the first 6 months of my recovery. As uncomfortable as it may feel, I encourage you guys to lean into it. Meditation has become probably one of the most important parts of my program. So, that being said, let's roll into this thing. So we're going to have a couple moments of silence. I'll say a prayer, do the reading, and then we're going to roll into meditation. So please, if your cell phone's not on silent, put it on silent now. God, we invite you into this room this afternoon. We ask that you lay aside any prejudice we have against this program, against spiritual terms, against each other, in hopes that we can hear a message of depth and weight. We ask that you just unblock us and allow us to be receptive to our speaker, facilitators, each other. Let's see if we can draw some connections in here so we can grow closer to you. Amen.
Amen.
So this reading is from 365 Tao, a little daily meditations book. It's titled Deserving. Prostrate before the altar. Are you worthy of your deity? Can you eliminate profanity and strive for constant adoration? It is not easy to worship. Simply going to a temple once a week to have a priest intercede on your behalf is not enough. True worship is a daily act of humbling yourself before your deity and offering a pure heart and holy words. A great holy leader came to my city once. He initiated 5,000 people into a simple practice of chanting. Since that time, it has been a struggle to keep up 108 chants a night. There is no prospect of stopping, no chance of finishing. In the same way, all scriptures must be recited. That means daily devotion. Once you begin, you cannot stop for the rest of your life. There is no room for laziness. Your body and mouth must be clean. You must be in a good frame of mind. And you cannot have uttered or done profane things. We must be worthy of our deities. It doesn't matter if we are getting anything out of it. Whether there is a response is secondary. The mere act of devotion is its own reward. It brings transformation. You guys will hear a bell when the meditation is over. So. So I wanted to start this session with a good little bit of meditation. As I kind of referenced for those of you that were here when I did the Step 2 workshop, you know, one of the hardest things for me to do when I first got sober was like sit and be with myself. 2 or 3 minutes of meditation felt like an eternity. It was miserable, and I didn't really care to practice it. But I think it's very noteworthy to look at that, and why is it that like we can't just sit with ourselves for an extended period of time, or even 2 or 3 minutes? I think that's a pretty good reflection of, you know, why we drank, why we shot dope, you know, why we smoked crack, all that stuff. I didn't really do anything with meditation for the first 6 months in recovery. Prayer was strong, always kind of has been strong, but in feeling that tenseness, that agitation, just being with myself, I was never able to really push through it until I met a couple people who are now my mentors, one of which is my sponsor, that, you know, kind of shared with me their experience of it. And, you know, like I talked about in the second step, you know, I need to have an experience with something to see the benefits of it. And one of my earliest profound experiences with meditation, you know, I'm going to share this little story with you. So, you know, I moved out of the halfway house, 6-7 months sober, something like that, still not doing a lot with meditation, kind of having like this crisis moment where I got offered a job to work in recovery, did a lot of prayer around it, didn't do a whole lot of meditation, felt like it was the right thing to do to take this new job, and so I did. Now, mind you, this job paid me $800 a month with a $50 gas card. Granted, my housing was paid for, but, you know, if you got a car payment, insurance payment, groceries, you know, I was pretty much living on bare minimum, far below the poverty line. And, you know, I pushed through it for a couple months, but I really started to question, like, you know, did I make the wrong decision? Did I, you know, was it really God that told me to take this job? What am I doing? Should I go back to work at this restaurant? Like, so much doubt was in my mind. And, you know, I was spending a lot of time in prayer and just asking God to make it clear what I should do, because I felt so lost. I wasn't getting any answers. You know, my sponsor at the time had directed me towards meditation and saying some prayers and really just like sitting and being with myself. And so I did that for a couple weeks, and, you know, nothing was really coming to me. And I was, you know, starting to get squirrely, and I was like, you know, maybe like I need to make a decision. And my sponsor kind of brought me back to center, and he said, well, what did God say? And I said, nothing. And he said, so do nothing. You know, if you're lost, like if you're driving down the road and you're lost and you don't know where you're going, do you just start making random turns in hopes to get yourself on the right track? I mean, maybe you guys do. I don't. I just stay the course, wait for a sign to tell me like, oh, okay, you got to get on 75, or this is how you get there, whatever it may be. So he told me to stay the course. And so I persevered through that a little bit, and I ended up getting a call on a Sunday night. This is a little over a year ago. I got a call on a Sunday night about 11 p.m. And it was my new employer. And it was just strange, because he's, you know, he's really big in like CA and speaking, and he's intimidating and he's well-spoken. And, you know, my first thought was when this guy called me was like, what did I do wrong? Like, why is this man calling me at 11 o'clock on a Sunday night? And after some quick discussion, it was offered me a job. a job that is in alignment with what I believe to be the path to permanent recovery. You know, and I don't think I would have made it there had I not taken that leap of faith from my old job. So I take the job, and about a week into it, I asked him, I said, "Hey man, why did you, we don't even know each other. Like, why, where'd you get my number? Why'd you call me? Like, well, I just want some clarity on that." You know, and he said he heard me share in a meeting 6 months prior and just had a thought in his mind that, I could work for him someday. And so he was sitting in prayer and meditation asking God, you know, who should he hire for this position? At the same time, I was like sitting in prayer and sitting in meditation asking God, like, you know, throw me a bone, dude. Like, I need somewhere to go. And so it was like we were both doing these things at the same time, and he just said my face popped into his mind during meditation. And that was a really profound experience for me, and that was when I really started to investigate meditation more and more. And it's really become like one of the most profoundly important parts of my daily practice. You know, it said in the meditation I read at the bottom, it said, it doesn't matter if we are getting anything out of it. Whether there is a response is secondary. The mere act of devotion is its own reward. It brings transformation. So I work in this industry. So I'm program director of that program now, by the way. Like, that was all as a result of, like, listening to God, listening to intuition, and just showing up for you guys. But so a lot of the guys in our program, a lot of guys I sponsor, you know, I'll ask them what's going on with prayer and meditation, and they're like, "Oh, prayer's good, you know, but I'm just not getting anything out of meditation." And my first thought is kind of like, well, how fucking selfish are you? You know, it doesn't serve you, so, you know, you're not going to do anything with it. Or it didn't serve you on your timeline, so you're just not going to do anything with it. To me, it comes down to is like, are you so ungrateful? Am I so ungrateful that I can't set aside 20 minutes of my day to just live in gratitude for the fact that I still live and breathe? You know, I don't think it's about getting anything out of it. I think if you get something out of it, that in and of itself is a gift. You know, I think it's a gift that we are just physically able to set aside 20 minutes of our day and spend that time with ourselves and God. Do you want to start reading?
Sure.
Actually, I did want to read one thing before Miles starts, because it's right before that part in the book.
More action.
Bottom of 85, it says, "Much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from Him who has all knowledge and power. If we have carefully followed directions, we have begun to sense the flow of His Spirit into us. To some extent, we have become God-conscious. We have begun to develop this vital sixth sense, but we must go further, and that means more action." That sixth sense they're talking about is intuition, you know, and sensing, you know, His power flow into us. When we look at the 11th step, it says, "Praying only for the knowledge of His will and the power to carry that out." And for a while, I didn't read that, or I didn't, like, really comprehend that, but Lindsay actually shared her story, I forget how long ago it was, but, and she said, you know, and I want you guys to kind of reflect on your experience in the past. Have you ever been doing something like an active addiction? And, you know, so for me, it was like, okay, I'm army crawling into my mom's bedroom at night to steal her keys and her debit card. And like in my chest, I'm like, this is so bad, dude. Like, this is going to be crumbling down. Or like when I stole her wedding ring and my father's wedding ring, I'm like, dude, this is so bad. Like, I had the knowledge of what His will was, and it wasn't to fucking do that, but I did not have the power to carry that out. You know, I think intuitively as human beings, it is, you know, if the fundamental idea of God is deep down in every single one of us, then the knowledge of what His will is for the most part, is there. But we don't always have the power to carry that out. And so that's why I believe that, you know, practicing this 11th step is so important. So I just wanted to touch on that real quick.
So I wanted to say something about, disclaimer. I don't particularly subscribe to any particular religion, but I do believe every word that this big book says, and it talks about, in what we're about to read, it talks about better men than we have. It talks about religious people. Is it in this chapter, or is it in a different chapter where it says, like, religion? Like,
I think it's in We Agnostics.
Yeah. So it talks about, like, religious people, and you know, it's good to understand what they're doing and understand what they're talking about. And, I look at, when I think of meditation, I think of a lot of Psalms 46:10. It says, "Be still and know that I am God." And what that says to me is that, like, for me to hear God's voice, I need to be still and I need to listen. And so I do know that a lot of this book is kind of written by people that do believe in Jesus Christ. And that helps me, like whenever I'm, like, in the chaos of the world and I have all this internal calamity going on, and it's very, very, very easy for that to happen on a day-to-day basis when, you know, things are catching up to you, whether it's work or your girlfriend or your whatever it may be. It's very easy for me to get into a place where I'm making decisions on my own and I'm not listening for answers. And, you know, it's cool. I can literally stop at any point during my day and I can listen, you know. Says the step, as it reads, is sought through prayer and meditation, to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, as I understood Him. Because it already tells me in step two that I can choose my own conception of God. So, you know, I mean, I've heard of all different kind of crazy things as far as how people, you know, are able to listen to God. I connect well, more so than reading a daily reflections. I connect with listening to music and then being still. It talks about, and after we do our fifth step, it talks about doing an hour of review. It doesn't say go to a quiet place. It says go to a place where I can be quiet. I don't have to. It doesn't have to be quiet around me. I can shut down and I can be still and I can listen anywhere I'm at, as long as people aren't bothering me. As far as, you know, hey. But it says go to a place where I can be still and I can be quiet and listen. Praying only for the knowledge of His will for us. So I pray for the knowledge of His will for us, and I meditate on what the power to carry that out is, what that looks like, what God's will looks like for me in that moment. So that's just my little two cents on that before we kind of go into, you know, and a lot of people, shit, if I wouldn't have been at the Bridges of Hope, and for the 4 or 5 years that I went into, I did not know that there was an inventory process in Step 11. I didn't know that there was a place in the actual step. It's very similar to what Step 10 tells us to do, as far as, you know, resentments, selfishness, watching for resentments, selfishness, and dishonesty. Except I'm not watching for it at that point. I'm reviewing my day. I'm thinking about the things that I've done. So I'm just going to read, and we're going to get into it. If you want me to stop, just tap me. Mm-hmm. Step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. It would be easy to be vague about this matter, yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. And so here is the instructions. When we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Were we kind and loving toward all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time, or were we thinking of what we could do for others, of what we could pack into the stream of life? But we must I didn't think there was any musts in this book.
Yeah.
Evidently, there's a lot, right? I think Tarek was talking about that yesterday. But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. After making our view, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. So, when I look at all that, so first off, I believe that this should be done on some form of paper or some form of. I have an app for that. It's called My Spiritual Toolkit, and it has exactly the questions that these have. Was I resentful? Was I selfish? Was I dishonest? And it allows me to go back into my nightly inventories, and I can go back and I can look all the way from years, like a year or two ago, whenever I started doing this. And I can see, one, where I was at, and two, the most important thing for me to do is to share this with someone, share this inventory with someone, so they know where I am, so they know how I'm, like, you know, and if there's, you know, for me personally, I share it with my sponsor, and I share it with another person as well that in our group text. And if, you know, we all review each other's, and if something's off, we call each other, because it's like, you know, if I say on there, I want to kill myself today, like, it warrants a phone call. I need to talk about that. I need to discuss that, you know. It's very important for me. One of the most important things for me to do in sobriety is to remain completely transparent on a extreme level, because I'm not the type of person that can harbor secrets. I can't think to think about him, man. Mm-hmm. And one of the guy that we were talking about on Friday that just passed away, that was his thing, man. He did everything, every single thing that this program had to offer. All the steps, he sponsored people like crazy. He met with a sponsor like crazy, but he was harboring a secret, and it killed him. He wasn't willing to get off it during the day during a 10-step, and he wasn't willing to put it on a review and share it with anybody.
There's a lot in these pages, but one thing I want to talk about that's in that paragraph, I guess. One thing that's really important is this morbid reflection thing. You know, a lot of people that struggle with meditation, you know, like, can't sit with their thoughts. I mean, I'll be straight up with you guys. You know, a lot of times in my meditation, it's violent, homicidal, sexual, weird. That's okay. Like, that stuff's going to happen. Like, we're all human beings. Like, we all are, like, monkeys. You know what I mean? Like, we have, like, primal needs and just kind of all kinds of weird shit and judgments that go on in our head. You know what I mean? But we don't have to, like, what does judging ourselves do about that? What does that say? Like, I shouldn't be thinking this. You know what I mean? I'm married. Like, why am I lusting over this girl? Or, you know, this guy's such a nice guy. Why am I cutting his head off with a dull axe in my head? You know what I mean? Like, I've had some really crazy stuff come up in meditation, you know? That's okay. You know, it's so important to just bear witness to it for what it is, and instead of being so consumed with yourself, like, in this, like, bullshit self-importance we've deemed ourselves, like, looking at that and saying, wow, like, I really do need God in my life, because I could be acting some of this shit out. You know? Or were we thinking of what we could do? Okay, yeah. Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time, or were we thinking of what we could do for others, of what we could pack into the stream of life? I don't know that there's ever been an evening review in the history of me doing evening review where I wasn't mostly thinking about myself all the time. That's okay. You know, we strive for spiritual progress, not spiritual perfection. You know, and when it says, but we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. You know what I mean? There's that self-pity, morbid reflection shit is not useful. It does not serve a purpose for the greater good. You know, that is you sitting in your own selfish, weird self-importance, like, that, you know what I mean? The universe revolves around you. It's not about you. One thing I like so much when Lindsay speaks is she really talks about, at the end of the day, all this is, you know, if the fundamental ideal of God is in every man, woman, and child, then, like, we're talking about, like, how I interact with you guys. Because if, you know, I'm going to draw some conclusions here, but if the fundamental idea of God is deep down in every man, woman, and child, and that means that the fundamental idea of God is deep down within every single one of you, then to me that means how I treat you is how I treat God. You know, and I think that's worth some of us reflecting on. I fall short of that all the time. So this next paragraph, on awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. So one habit I've actually, you know, gotten into, I mean, I'll be straight up with you, I haven't done an evening review in like a minute. You know, when I am doing evening review, as I go through these questions at the end, I try to, like, you know, write down, like, what is it I'm going to do tomorrow? Like, what do I need to get done? And so in the morning, I can look at how I showed up in life with you guys, and look at what I have to do, consider the 24 hours ahead, and ask God to direct my thinking in accordance of how I showed up yesterday. You know, because at the end of the day, you know, I think my job on this earth is to leave it just a little bit better than... leave it a little bit better than it was when I got here. And so to do that, I need to do a little bit better than I did yesterday. And so, you know, with this whole prayer meditation thing, the best advice I can give anybody is, like, make it your own thing. You know? Like, make it fun. Make it something that you enjoy. Make it something you look forward to. You know, like this is like the ultimate self-care that we're talking about. I don't think there's anything really more important than, you know, so if this is a spiritual program, you know, it's a finger that points to God. This whole thing is like a path to, you know, a spiritual experience. Then spending time in prayer and meditation is vital. And so, you know, maybe I'm not a religious guy. I'm not a Jeezy guy. I'm not Jewish. I'm not, you know, like, I've spent some time at this Buddhist temple downtown. There's this Hindu fellowship in Smyrna that's pretty cool. They do some really sweet meditations and chanting. And there's a line in the book. It says, be quick to see where religious people are right and make use of what they offer. And I think there's wisdom in all faiths. Do I subscribe to any of them? No. At the end of the day, I'm more of like a, who am I to say who's right and who's wrong? Like, everybody has some stuff I can get down with, you know, but find some books that you like to read, you know, go get a cool daily meditation book, or, you know, there's so much stuff out there, you know. Eckhart Tolle, I just gave him this really cool book by a Jesuit priest called Awareness. You know, there's so much stuff out there that there's something for everyone. And just finding a practice that you can look forward to where it doesn't feel like a chore, where your heart can be in it. Because if your heart's not involved with it, in my opinion, like, if you're just checking off a box, then it's not real. It doesn't have substance to it, you know? When I wake up in the morning, the first thing I look forward to is coming home and, like, reading and, like, doing my practices before bed. You know, not to say that I just want this day to be over with, but it's like I have something to look forward to every night, you know? And that's, I don't know, it's sacred to me. Yeah. Did you want to share anything else?
No. You did. You said everything I was going to say. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration and intuitive thought or decision. So is that, do you think that's like a be still and listen type of thing?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was thinking. We relax and take it easy. We do not struggle. We are often surprised how the right answers come after we have tried this for a while. And the don't struggle part is just, you know, like what Tarek was talking about.
Cease fighting.
Yes, cease fighting. What Tarek was talking about yesterday is like, he used to have people do this stuff too before, like whenever he was like first sponsoring people, and then he realized that all this stuff happened after you have achieved like a sane mind. You're not like, if I try to do this, I remember trying to do this in treatment, and because we used to read this every morning at the Bridges of Hope, and I remember thinking like, man, that stuff all sounds really cool. I hope one day I can do that. But like, the reality of the situation is like, until I've written a fourth and fifth, or written a fourth step, done a fifth step, looked at those character defects, made amends to some people, and started taking a daily inventory, I'm still struggling. I cannot not struggle. My life is a continuous struggle. And then, after I have that awakening, that spiritual awakening in my spirit, I get to be inspired by God. And that's not to say that God can't come to you before then. For me, he didn't, though. I didn't have any action with God, any nothing, until, as far as me feeling and me understanding, until after I'd finished all the steps and had that awakening of the Spirit. So we are often surprised how the right answers come after we have tried this for a while. What used to be the occasional hunch or inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind.
That's good news.
Yeah, thank God. Being still inexperienced and just having made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. We might pray for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We have come to rely upon it. We usually conclude this period of meditation with a prayer. So it's telling me when I should start. I should pray. I should pray after I meditate. I prayed before I meditated for a really long time. So we usually conclude this period of meditation with a prayer, that we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be, that we be given whatever they need to take care of such problems. We ask especially for freedom from self-will and are careful to make no requests for ourselves only. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. We are careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. Many of us have wasted a lot of time doing that, and it doesn't work. You can easily see why. So yeah, I mean, like, all of my prayers before I got to sobriety were basically the jailhouse foxhole. God, I swear, Jesus, if you get me out of this, I will never do that again. And it never worked, and you can easily see why. All my prayers were always about me. It never had, like, I wasn't praying for world peace when I was, like, day three shaking it off in the tub trying to, like, just feel something again, you know? Like, I'm praying, I'm like, God, please help me get through this. Please help me feel better. You know, please help me run across a couple subs today. That kind of stuff. You know, I'm not praying for world peace and starvation to end. You know, and I shouldn't either. I shouldn't do that now either. And that's not to say that I can't, you know, I can't ask for, like, you know, God, please help me with this situation, because, you know, I can do that as long as other people are involved. Other people are going to be helped. I'm not just praying for, like, God, please buy me a new car, or please help me scratch off a $500,000 lottery ticket, you know? You got anything?
Yeah, I do. As far as, like, the selfish prayers that it was kind of talking about, you know, it also says in here, like, yeah, we may ask for ourselves, however, only if others will be helped. You know, in the second step, we talked about, like, God is everything or he is nothing. If God is everything, then God is everything. The good things, the bad things, the things that are neither good or bad. I don't think, if God is this, like, everything, then, like, do you really think God thinks in terms of, like, what's good and what's bad? Because good and bad is such like a relative term. Like my heroin addiction or my meth addiction was like really bad when I was in it. It was fucking terrible. But like now it's like one of the greatest gifts I've ever been given. So like, you know, we think in terms of good and bad. I don't think God thinks like that. Certainly not in such a short window of time if he is all-knowing. You know, and so praying for selfish things like the new car, the new job, or, you know, whatever. I got a new job as a result of it, but I wasn't praying for a new job. I was praying. I was asking God for clarity. My prayers today much more look like, you know, God, please just allow me to be okay with whatever the fuck you want to do today. Because you're going to do whatever you're going to do, you know, so just give me the capacity to be okay with it and move forward and, like, be helpful to others. Because a lot of people can develop a resentment there, where if God isn't answering your prayers the way you want, you know, God's not serving you because you're so goddamn important, you're going to develop a resentment, you know. When, if God is everything and God is the good and the bad, then when you get into a nasty car accident and you're sitting in the hospital and they're about to give you morphine and you're praying to God, you are praying for God's protection from God. Like, you are seeking refuge in him from him. You know what I mean? That's kind of wacky, but, like, that's kind of how this thing's working here. You know? Like, he's pulling you through this for a reason. We're just too short-sighted to see it. So instead of praying for your own selfish ends, why don't we try and, you know, pray for the ability to move through whatever God's will is with some grace and dignity. That's all I got.
If circumstances warrant, we ask our wives or friends to join us in morning meditation. If we belong to a religious denomination which requires a definite morning devotion, we attend to that also. If not members of religious bodies, we sometimes select and memorize a few set prayers which emphasize the principles we have been discussing. There are many helpful books. Suggestions about these may be obtained from one's priest, minister, or rabbi. Be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they have to offer. As we go through the day, here's some more instruction. As we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action. We constantly remind ourselves that we are no longer running the show, humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, "Thy will be done." We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. We become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily, for we are not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. It works, it really does. We alcoholics are undisciplined, so we let God discipline us in the simple way we have just outlined. But this is not all. There is action and more action. Faith without works is dead. You got something?
Not really. I think I've kind of been up on my soapbox enough today. If anyone has any questions, feel free to come up to me or Miles and ask us afterwards.
So I think the biggest thing about this is coming to have a closer relationship with God and remaining unblocked, staying unblocked, so I can continue to be a vessel for my higher power to help other people. That's just my opinion on it. But with that, yeah, we can wrap it up.